Welcome to the Kommunizierbar, the Archetype Podcast on all things related to impactful communication.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Lars.
Hello and welcome to the fifth episode of the Kommunizierbar, our Archetype Podcast about communication with an impact. And in this episode, we want to discuss how the audio business has transformed and digitized over the years and where some of the overlaps could be to event marketing and journalism. And I'm very happy to announce our first international guest to our podcast. And there's no better person to speak about those topics than Oisin Lunny. Welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you, Lars. Thank you, Andrea. Great to be here. And if anyone's listening, you won't be able to have seen it, but you might have heard me punch the air for being the first international guest. Yes. Well, thank you so much. I'm honored to be here. It's great to see you both.
Thank you.
Yes, as Lars mentioned, you are the perfect guest for this episode. You are a award-winning marketeer, a keynote speaker, a music editor of Phoenix Magazine. You are a senior contributor to Forbes. You are a composer, a producer, a DJ, a webinar and radio host, and the host of a few podcasts, and most importantly, our Harman Audio Talks podcast, which is great fun to do.
Oh, what an intro. Thank you so much. That's your checks in the post, Andrea.
So, Oisin, how does it feel to sit on the opposite side today?
Oh, I'm delighted and terrified. And it feels great to be here. It's just a joy. You know, lovely to see you both. And, I love what you do. I love what you're doing with the podcast. And so I'm thrilled to be involved.
Yeah, thank you very much. So, as Andrea told me, so audio and music has been a huge part of your career so far. And you actually started as a musician, Andrea told me. And we did some research.
Uh-oh.
You had a band called Marksmen in the 90s, I think. And you were also doing concerts with Depeche Mode, is that right?
Yes, like implausible as it may seem, A, I was in a rap band in the 90s, and B, we actually got to support Depeche Mode and you too a couple of times as well, which was
wow.
Nuts. The Depeche Mode tours were amazing. It was the Songs of Faith and Devotion tour. They were, you know, as any article from that time will tell you, that was the craziest, most rock and roll tour that Depeche Mode ever did. I think the lead singer, Dave Gahan, technically died on that tour when they went to America and was reinvigorated Pulp Fiction style by an injection of adrenaline or something like this. It was pretty nuts, but they were so, so good to us. For letting us go on tour with them, and B, they really did let us just hang out with them and have some, you know, good times and some amazing parties. And it was an incredible privilege to be part of that. And you know, my best live music experience to this day remains seeing Depeche Mode in 1992 in the Palau Sant Jordi in Barcelona. It was an indoor stadium. The first thing they did when they came on stage was just kill the house lights completely, and the place went nuts. I've never experienced any energy like that. And then gradually the members of the band came on stage. They started playing a song one by one. These big silhouettes were projected on these huge sheets. And then at the crescendo, the opening number, some fireworks went off on stage. The lights came on. Everybody went nuts. And that level of excitement and hysteria did not leave for the entire gig. It was extraordinary. So, yeah, good times, long time ago. And bonus points for the research. Thank you.
Wow. So is there a video by any chance that you could upload to YouTube about that?
Oh, no.
Good concert?
No, I mean, in many ways, I'm quite glad there weren't really video cameras and that kind of thing back in the day. I really do feel for, you know, the young folks these days where everything is through a goldfish bowl, you know, all their lives have to be perfect and filtered and on Instagram, and everything that you see in everybody else's lives is, of course, perfect because it's only the best bits. When I think about what my Instagram or Facebook would have looked like in the 90s, I die inside. So I'm glad they didn't exist. And young people today have my huge respect for being able to navigate this much more complicated and transparent world today.
Yeah, same with me. I was 18 in 1992, so I'm really glad that there wasn't any social media back then. Absolutely.
Amen.
Well, I won't tell you how old I was in 1992.
Fantastic.
How did that experience back in the days actually helped you to become what you are today?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, it was kind of like everything in my life. It was sort of unplanned, unexpected, quite serendipitous, and more by accident than design. Basically, I was, you know, always passionate about music and art and the creative world. I went to art college. I dropped out because the band I was in got a record deal. I left Ireland and moved to the UK. We made an album. We started doing the tours that we just mentioned. And then after this, we kind of reached that difficult second album phase, and both the singers decided they couldn't work with each other, and it kind of all crumbled very quickly. And I kind of did some solo work as an artist. I released an album called Firstborn, had a bit of a club hit, did some DJing, did, you know, a few bits and pieces for a little while. And then I kind of realized I'd run out of road. Record label that I was with, you know, released the record and it did okay, but it wasn't really a sustainable career. I was kind of screwed. And then at the same time, I was invited on the BBC by a lady called Maud Hand. And it was to be a guest on the BBC World Service to give the musician's eye view on this crazy new thing called the internet. And this was back in the late 90s. So it had been around for a long time, but it wasn't really a big consumer thing. There were internet cafes. And so in preparation for the show, I went to an internet cafe, as you did, and did a search for music on the internet. And at this stage, I had no idea what I was going to do, how I could make a living. I had no qualifications, no kind of notable experience in anything aside from being a musician and producer. And I'd also just become a father. So I was, you know, I needed a way to make a living very quickly. And it was like the sky opened and a beam of sun came down and hit me on the head and said, it's the internet, stupid. And so I thought, wow, this is it. I need to position myself right here. This is what I have to know about. How do I do this? And I asked some neighbors who lived nearby. I kind of blagged my way onto a training course, learned the basics of HTML and how to do a small business plan and profit and loss. And this was a great thing run by the government. And then I asked some friends of mine. I said, I've got this course, I've got the basics, I know how email and the internet works. What? How do I get into this stuff? And they said, well, you know, can you take 4 years out to do a computer science degree? And I said, no, I don't have 4 months. And they said, well, okay, then what you need to do is go and get a job at the very, very bottom of a tech company. That means that you will be able to learn at the same time as you work. So I got a job in a call center, and it really was a graveyard shift, you know, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. answering the phone to drunk English guys, you know, very angry, paying 50 pence a minute, you know, and their video download for like sports or something, it doesn't work. And then, you know, I had to learn a lot of good customer service skills very quickly. So it was actually an amazing way to learn in a concentrated way. So long story short, I did that. I taught myself how to do web design and all that kind of stuff as I was working those night shifts and day shifts at the internet service provider. And then I used that to build a portfolio, and then I used a portfolio to get a junior job. And it just kind of went like that. And I would kind of, you know, do a little step up the ladder every few months. And it kind of evolved to this point where I did account design, project management, account management, you know, a bit of coding, a bit of everything. So I sort of knew how to bridge the gap between the techies and the designers and the clients. And so I was kind of this conduit just to help things go nice and smoothly. And that just evolved into product management and country management and all these different roles where basically I was sort of the center of a wheel where you have lots of people doing different things and they need a bit of somebody in the middle just translating things and helping things go smoothly. But what I found is that my experience in music, because I didn't have that 4 years studying computer science, sadly, although I know people, brilliant people who did. But what I did have was sort of an interesting past to speak about. And so I found that networking and, you know, making a personal connection with people at super high levels of business, because by this stage I was in you know, I was beginning to speak at conferences and networking was quite important. I discovered that having some passion for music was actually an amazing shortcut and a way to bond with people very profoundly in a very short space of time. And so my background in music, and I would say this to anybody with a background in music or a passion in music, it can actually be an incredible way to forge a connection with somebody. And it doesn't matter where you're from, where you're working, this common ground of music is so powerful. And so to kind of reach the end of a very long answer to your question, that's sort of the way in which it helped. You know, I went into tech, all these different areas of technology and business and all these different firms, and ended up working with Fortune 500 companies. But the foundational experience in music turned out to be an incredible asset, an incredible differentiator. You know, I didn't have a lot of the things that other people had, but what I did have was quite interesting to chat about.
Mm-hmm. So to all of our listeners, keep it in mind, find something you're passionate about and use it for networking. I think it's a great tip.
Nicely summarized. I totally agree.
So in our last episode that our listeners might have heard already, we mainly spoke about social audio and how this new format will become or is already becoming more and more important for organizations to jump onto and to make use of. Eugen, do you remember the first time you ever encountered podcasting or podcasts?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been aware of podcasts for a fair old while. There's a gentleman called Jeff Pulver, who is a very interesting person in technology, and he organizes conferences, and he was one of the people who helped make voice over IP a reality in America. He was absolutely central to so many very interesting things in technology to do with communications. But he was one of the very first people to become passionate about podcasting. So podcasting was something I was aware of through my work doing conferences and speaking and meeting people and all the rest. But I have to say, I really started diving into podcasts in earnest when I think I got very interested in Brexit, because I lived in the UK for 27 years. And, you know, although I'm from Ireland and, you know, but I'm an Irish citizen, my wife is from Sweden, my children have dual nationality, Irish and English. And so the whole issue of Brexit suddenly became incredibly pressing and fascinating. And I wanted to know everything about it. So I started listening to a podcast in the UK called Romaniacs, that's now called Oh God, What Now? Because I had to change the name because the UK didn't remain. And I just, from that point on, I realized that podcasting was a kind of parallel educational and entertainment stream that can just be happening at the same time as you're doing other stuff. So it became my companion when I was commuting, traveling, when I'm cooking, doing anything domestic, I usually have a podcast on, and there's a bunch of them that I listen to pretty much every week, and I've probably listened to every episode ever. And yeah, I just think it's a fantastic form of expression. The ability to multitask is worth its weight in gold. It really is. And there's some incredibly thoughtful and well-produced podcasts out there that I'm, you know, just addicted to pretty much.
Yeah, same with me. Absolutely. Yeah. I do love podcasts. Yeah. So you wrote an article end of last year about branded podcasts and their effectiveness in marketing. Wow. And you already mentioned some reasons or something about the, you know, why branded podcasts or podcasts could actually be a very good tool or a good platform for companies. But what would you say when we really talk about the effectiveness of branded podcasts? So what are the main things that make podcast an effective platform or an effective tool for companies?
Well, that's, again, bonus points for the research. That's absolutely brilliant. Yes, that was an article last year. I think one of the things that makes podcasts so effective is the fact that it's, you're really, you know, if you wanted to visualize it, it's like you're taking a seat on a sofa and there's some folks sitting beside you and they're having a really interesting conversation and you're part of the conversation. You can sit there and listen to the conversation. But the kind of magical thing about podcasts is that you don't actually have to get involved. You can be doing something else, but you're still part of that social, you know, vibe about the conversation. So I think the intimacy of the human voice as a way for people to connect, to feel comfortable, to feel familiar, to get to know people, I think that can be incredibly powerful. And as long as the conversations are put together with respect and with respect to the audience's incredibly valuable time, you know, this is something that will generate so much loyalty and really a feeling of familiarity, a feeling of, you know, this is a brand that gives me interesting stuff every episode. This is great. You know, rather than, oh, here's a, you know, 5-minute advert for such and such followed by somebody talking for 2 hours. You know, there's kind of different ways of doing it. But I like it when it's intimate, it's conversational, it's with interesting people about interesting things. And I think the benefits for brands in terms of recognition are huge. I do remember having some statistics and links in there to studies that were done, I think by the BBC or NPR. And it basically showed that the branded podcasts are incredibly effective for brand recall. Authenticity, familiarity, that congeniality you get from a conversational flow, you know, people feel comfortable with it. And I think the nature of the audio only, the multitasking features in podcasting can fit it into people's everyday lives. So I listen to at least 3 podcasts a day, come hell or high water, and sometimes that's going to be more. And I just find them fascinating. And I feel very grateful to the people who put them together and the brands who were involved, with a nice kind of very symbiotic, authentic, you know, relationship between a brand and the subject matter that makes sense. And, you know, I'm hugely grateful to work with brands that, you know, walk that balance supremely well.
So what do you think, what role should podcasts play in marketing? So we've already spoken about that many companies are jumping on to that trend and they're creating podcasts. But do you think it should be more of a topic that marketing focuses on in the future?
Absolutely. I do. I mean, with the caveat that the content should be empathetic, it should be, you know, user-centric. You should really be standing, as you know, all of our friends and colleagues do, standing in the shoes of the consumers and really thinking about what would make their life better, what would be interesting to them, what's the key issues that they really need to know about today. And that way, you know, always be adding value. I mean, in the music industry, there's a saying, you're as good as your last record, which is kind of brutally to the point and completely true, you know. And you know, looking at it the same way, you're kind of as good as your last podcast. So like every episode that you produce, you have to be giving value to the listener and always be thinking of the listener. And brands can do that magnificently. I mean, one of the things I heard about on a podcast as I was driving into Barcelona today was there's a company that has AI voice modeling. So if you have a guest and they, you know, you'll chat to them and then you forget to ask them a question, you can actually type in the answer and put it in their voice and they will answer in their voice. The AI figures out the biometrics of their voice from the other stuff that they said. Now that's kind of terrifying, but you know, no, totally. It is absolutely. And another thing that's happening a lot is that, you know, folks are just throwing money at celebrities. And so you've got the biggest possible celebrities who maybe don't have much of an overlap with the subject matter area that they're talking about, or I don't know if they're interested in it particularly, but it's a famous Hollywood voice who hasn't been on a film set in a year and they are narrating this documentary about XYZ. And that's kind of another thing as well. Now, I think that kind of, you know, it's all fine. It's all fine. It's like, if people like it, it's all good. But there's something very special about the democratizing nature of podcasts and the fact that anybody listening to this podcast can make a podcast, launch it tomorrow, publish it on all the main platforms and build a community and have a voice and speak to that community. You know, brands should be absolutely a part of this conversation, but I think brands need to be even a bit more careful than individuals because, you know, A, the brand association, but B, it's important for brands not to be seen as kind of muscling in and maybe, you know, degrading the format.
So I recently attended a podcast conference. They did a short poll on the side of the chat and they asked how many people actually listen to corporate podcasts. And actually more than half of the people attending, which were around, I think, 500 people, they didn't listen to corporate podcasts. And I think that's exactly why, because the company is too much in the... So too much in the center of the whole storytelling, and they should take themselves back a little bit.
Yeah, it's a tough balance, but if you get it right, it's magnificent. You know, you can reach potentially millions of people with great authenticity and with a sense of purpose, and with, you can create something that adds value to their lives every time they listen. And that's just magic. You know, there's very few formats that are really as open for this, you know, at this level of investment For this potential return, podcasting is just incredible. You can do things on podcasting that would be very difficult to do on, with video content, for instance, with movie content, with TV content. So podcasting kind of democratizes marketing in some respects, but consumers can really see through it. But listeners are so sophisticated, and particularly after the lockdown, everyone has had all the time in the world to choose their favorite podcast, to become familiar with what a good podcast feels like. And if they get a sniff that something is just an advert, they won't really be drawn to it.
Yeah,
absolutely. So what do you have you tried Clubhouse or other social audio features or social audio platforms?
Oh yeah. I mean, when Clubhouse came out, I can't remember when I got an invite, but it seemed very intriguing. So when I signed up, I just connected all of my different platforms and social profiles, should I say, and then noticed when, all of my friends and contacts were joining, and it seemed really interesting. You know, Clubhouse really democratizes social audio. So it's kind of anybody can launch a podcast in real time. Anybody can have a conference or a fireside chat or a panel, or, provide some inspiration in real time. I think it's absolutely wonderful. The thing that strikes me, though, as I was kind of just channel hopping, if you like, in Clubhouse, there's so much content on there. Some of it can be, maybe very improvised. And I think there's a real art to making improvised content and discussions work. And sometimes it can seem a bit, meandering. So it's difficult to keep the users focused. But I've also been involved in some very well moderated and planned Clubhouse sessions that have been fantastically interesting. So as with everything else, I think it depends on organization, bit of planning, bit of moderating, getting the right people together, agreeing a theme and maybe a flow, and then improvising within that bit of a structure. If it's just a bunch of people in a room and everybody's talking, that's exactly what it sounds like. But, on the theme of democratization, I know that, I read that it's been used very much as a platform of empowerment for folks who, maybe don't have access to mainstream channels so much. So there's a lot of people of color who are using it to kind of teach entrepreneurship and to kind of spread positive messages and to lift each other up. And I think that's amazing. The question around Clubhouse is kind of the same question around podcasts. The quality can be very mixed, but quality is totally subjective. I'm on the advisory board for South by Southwest, which just means I help kind of judge the entries. And that's, it's such an honor and a thrill to be involved in that. It's absolutely fascinating because you get to see so many different proposals for sessions and panels at South by Southwest and from amazing people. And as a result, I kind of keep a close eye on the content that makes it through and then what happens next. And I joined a few Clubhouses after screenings on South by Southwest. And that was fascinating. And that was like a really interesting continuation of the conversations that were happening at South by Southwest with fascinating people. And there was one I hopped on. It was, my friend Mark Buckley does this incredible podcast about sustainability. And he's been in this field forever. He's absolutely brilliant. And one of his guests mentioned on his podcast that they would be going over to Clubhouse to have a conversation about Seaspiracy, which is a film I thought was amazing. Yeah. And so I hopped straight over to that. So I think the overlap between podcasts and Clubhouse can be incredible in that you have quite an organized and maybe there's a time limit on the podcast. But then if people want to get involved and ask you stuff directly, you can just hop over to Clubhouse. And now that it's on Android as well, it is very accessible, which is wonderful. So I think there's a good overlap between the two. But like you say, you do want to have somebody who's, got the awkwardometer and is just going to wrap it up when it needs to be wrapped up.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting what you just said about, the combination or what's the added value of a social audio platform, to and podcast platforms. Mm. And I think that's something that Spotify, for example, is looking into, and also Facebook, right? Where they kind of try to, they do have podcasts on their platform, Spotify, and they also now look into like enhancing or having an added value with a social audio platform where, for example, their content creators, their podcast hosts can then connect with their listeners, with the community, right? And I think that could be very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's kind of a question mark there as well about, you know, what happens when lots of people are vaccinated and the R rate is going down and borders open up and travel opens up. Because it seems like social audio is slightly more of a, you know, you couldn't necessarily engage fully with a clubhouse chat if you were on a crowded train. But listening to a podcast with nice ear-canceling headphones, absolutely no problem. It's perfect. So there's something that there's kind of a slightly higher level of time and, you know, presence commitment to do with being involved in a clubhouse session that we might find goes down a bit as the world opens up. But podcasts, I think, is, you know, it's something that can happen anywhere at any time. So, yeah, it's, I think we'll see many, many Clubhouse competitors. All the main platforms have one, one way or another. Clubhouse is the one that's kind of took the lion's share of the market to begin with. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Clubhouse moving forward.
All right. So now looking at the pandemic and that we're hopefully close to leaving the pandemic world.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think, or what are your thoughts on the post-pandemic world, and what do you think might come next in audio and podcasting?
I am beginning to see personally that some events are opening up again. I am also hosting 4 years from now, which is part of Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. So I'll be emceeing on the stage there, and also working with the Korean embassy, which is going to be some fun. So what I'm seeing personally is that the things that have just been off the table for, you know, since February, March of last year are suddenly bit by bit coming back on the table. And I think that's thrilling. Now, having said that, I don't think we are going to go back to the old normal, and I don't think we should, you know, if possible. There are so many advantages for fields, particularly like telehealth. I think telehealth is just a giant future industry. And, you know, the fact that Amazon, companies like that are getting involved, is very meaningful. So I think the things that we've learned from the pandemic in terms of remote working, in terms of folks not having to be in the office all the time, these are lessons that we should not forget. And, you know, the same with events. Yeah, events should not be, you know, business travel should not go back to how it was. You know, there's a huge environmental impact that we were able to put in perspective globally, thanks to the lockdowns. You know, for all the human tragedy, it was, you know, interesting. It was heartening to see pollution levels falling and, you know, nature kind of taking back certain areas. And, you know, we've reached this decade of action, and we've kind of, the pandemic has really put a focus on it, but also, you know, distracted people from a lot of the environmental conversations that were happening at the beginning of the decade. And, you know, it's as we kind of come back to business as usual, quote unquote, it's so important that it's not business as it was. You know, I think we need to have more of a focus on environmental matters, on ESG, on the sustainable development goals. And it's a great opportunity. So yeah, I'm hopeful for the future. I really am. I think it's, you know, humanity has shown its ingenuity and its ability to collaborate and support each other throughout the pandemic, and particularly through the vaccination rollouts. I would be thrilled if we could see a new era of global cooperation, because one of the things the pandemic has done is shown us that, you know, we're not really as insulated as we like to think we are. And to use a kind of famous quote, nobody's safe until everybody's safe. You know, that's the thing. So I think we're going to go back to Irvine Welsh, the Scottish author, said, things won't go back to normal. Things will be much, much better than that. And I'm hopeful that he's right, but it's in all of our hands, I think.
All right, we're getting to the end. We have a format on the Kommunizierbar called Die Last Round, or as we say in German, Die Letzte Runde. There are particular questions we like to ask our guests. So for you, we've thought of a very fun one, which is, if you had freedom of choice or full creative freedom, which format or which topic of podcast would you love to do one day?
Oh my goodness, that's a great question. To be honest, the answer that comes to mind is exactly what I'm doing now. I mean, it's just fantastic. I'm having a ball every single episode. I do two podcasts, one for our dear friends Harman, another one for Siemens, which is an amazing company. They're going to be net zero by 2030, and they're well on the way there. They're real leaders in sustainability. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm in my element. As somebody who loves technology, who loves music, who loves people, who loves innovation, I am just in my happy place every time I do a podcast. So I can't, you know, nothing comes to mind in terms of like an extra element or an extra format that could possibly improve what I'm doing now. But who knows? I'm a great believer in serendipity. So let's see what comes up. You know, I've always, since being in the music industry and getting into technology through the very roundabout and unplanned way that I, you know, mentioned earlier, I've always liked to be at the overlap between people, technology, culture, communication, all these interesting things. And it's, the overlap is always so interesting. So that's exactly what I do now with the different podcasts and webinars and events that I'm involved in. So, you know, if I had a wish, it would be, you know, more of the same and just see where it goes.
Great. And, awesome. And maybe a very, very last question to you. If there was a very good podcast production company like Archetype, for example, and would come to you and say, you know what, Ashin, we want to do a podcast about your life. What would the name of this podcast be?
Whoa, that's amazing. That's what a great question. Okay, would it be like... more by accident than design doesn't really have a catchy phrase. What would it be? There's riding the S curve, which, no, what was that? There is, feel the imposter syndrome and do it anyway. How's that?
Very good.
I love it.
or that, or JFDI, which means just flipping do it.
very good. That'd be good.
Yes. So we definitely tune in.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ashin. That was really fun.
Thanks
talking
so much.
To you.
Listen, thank you both so much. It's been great to chat to you both. I love what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. And yeah, upwards and onwards. More Community Sabar and more podcasts. Yes, please.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bye, Ashin.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. If you have any questions or comments, find us on social media through the links in the show notes below. If you've enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to the Kommunizierbar podcast to not miss a future episode. Until next time!